Welcome back, everybody, to the Enterprise Dish. It is January. We are past D-Day for Windows 7. We are talking Windows, and welcoming back again is Mr. Aaron Suzuki up in the Seattle area. How's it going, Aaron?
Going well. Happy 2020. Glad to be back on the stick doing it again.
Yeah, we are through the holidays, through. We were just talking right before the show, what I would call the slow time of the year, at least for us. And now things are ramping up full speed ahead. We passed the point of no return unless you are willing to open up the checkbook. But January 14th has come and gone, and Windows 7, it's over. Like, that's the end of an era.
Well, I mean, there's a little bit of a question, though, around that, really, right? I mean, over meaning that you should move.
Yeah.
Is really what it is, right? You can buy, if you're a business, which I think most of our listeners are, you can buy extended support. And I was just talking with one of my colleagues about the fact that, and then we talked about this on an episode a while ago, that, hey, you might have all these devices that run some specialized, equipment in yep. your factory or in your plant. And that might be on Windows 7, and it's attached to a machine that costs whatever, $1.5 million, and you're not really gonna, run and replace that machine just to upgrade the operating system.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I think that's part of the thing. So, but yeah, I mean, we have seen most of our people cut over. I read an article that said, there are still tens of thousands of organizations, which I'm sure is true.
Oh, yeah.
Running Windows 7. But for us, we see, tens to hundreds of thousands of deployments a month.
Mm-hmm.
Based on our data, it looks like, and we don't have perfect data, we don't have all the insight from everyone, but
yeah.
based on some, telemetry and extrapolation,
yep.
we think about 2% of OS deployments that we're seeing are Windows 7.
Really?
So that seems plausible.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
Like 98, we're 98% of the way there. That seems, about right.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you able to tell, curious, like the volume, like could one customer be doing it, but then behind the scenes, that's actually, I don't know, 1 million machines or some random number?
For privacy reasons, even though it's de-identified, we don't go that far.
Okay.
So that's possible.
Yeah.
But we're also talking about, scale that's relevant, right?
Sure.
1,000 Windows 7 deployments versus say 50,000,
yeah.
Windows 10 deployments. Even if you're deploying it over and over again. That said, though, there are, institutions that have, labs with devices in the thousands and,
mm-hmm.
And they might be reimaging those, or even a lab that they reimage weekly or something like that with, 100 or 200 devices that could account for the majority of that. So, yeah, that's a very fair point.
Yep.
But we do know from, other data surveys and other places that have reported that, there are a lot of people who have reasons to continue to use it, but you do pay dearly, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no doubt about it. But it's time to get off, right, to your point. Like, let's get on with the show here, right? It's a new time. And in the same breath, though, I'm going to contradict myself right now, but businesses have all these constraints. You got budget constraints, and we've mm-hmm. talked about this in the past too, that we live in the real world. We don't live in this fantasy where you can kind of just keep pace with technology because the manufacturers say you should. Businesses operate according to their own agenda,
yep.
and even to a certain extent risk kind of be damned. Like, let's mm-hmm. we need to keep doing this, and we accept some degree of risk. And we're seeing in a recent example, a nice segue, that sometimes that risk can be pretty onerous, right?
Yep. Yeah. I mean, you're right. You make a good point. There are certainly businesses out there that say, hey, if we spend all this money to upgrade, it's going to put a sizable dent in just our business operations. And what good is it if we're all on Windows 10, but we don't have a company anymore?
That's right. But, the flip side is there's been plenty of warning. The deadline's
yep.
been out there. So, the fact that an OS time, end of life time frame doesn't fit into your strategic plan for your business
mm-hmm.
Doesn't necessarily, compel you to follow through on that. But hopefully, right. you know, and even our data suggests that the vast majority of customers have been able to adjust to that, right? I mean, even at a home use level, I'm not seeing a lot of Windows 7 on devices and things like that. So,
I would agree with that. I mean, the outlier that always jumps into my head, which is actually a government institution, the National Health System in the UK, right? That Microsoft deliberately had to patch Windows XP for them after it was end of life. And so I'm curious if those folks went straight from XP to 10, or if they went from XP to 7. If they're still on 7, then they're probably dealing with a similar issue, but hopefully they're on 10.
Yeah, we'll have to ask them. They're a Graterly customer of Smart Deploy. But you know, to that end as well, I'm sure that it was sort of circumstantial,
sure.
and that they're a perfect example of an organization that would rely on legacy systems. Think of all the radiology things.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
you've got some big behemoth device mm-hmm. that, you know, runs a certain way and requires a certain kit. And underlying that is a PC running Windows 7 or Windows XP or whatever yep. was, you know, in the past. And, you know, the manufacturer, whether it's, you know, whomever, GE or, you know, whoever does medical imaging, has moved on and they've, mm-hmm. you know, developed the new device that's even more efficient and lower radiation and all these things against the new operating platform, which would be Windows 10. And yes, we'd love you to buy this, you know, to the tune of $5 or $8 or $12 million
right.
or, you know, whatever, 15 million pounds. And the NHS is saying no way, because they've got an entire, you know, country to look at to say, if we do it in one location, we've got to yep. do it in hundreds or thousands, and now it's a $1 billion problem,
yep.
right? So it's sort of a really interesting set of circumstances. So the question is, you know, what do you do? And I think this is probably the discussion for a lot of CIOs, is backing into, okay, we live with this degree of exposure and we do a lot of extra effort to tamp down, mm-hmm. You know, everywhere else and keep plugging.
Yep, yeah, right? It's an evergreen challenge, right? Because while we'd like to think that, hey, Windows 7 is going away, but we'll face the same thing with Windows 10 at some point, especially if you adopted some of those early SKUs that came out and that are exiting support. And it's just, and other software will expire too, aside from Windows.
No question. And sort of the use and the behavior of businesses with respect to Windows.
Yep.
Right. And so this is sort of something I've been thinking about end of year and the future and, you know, even reading your colleague Paul's thoughts mm-hmm. on Windows, and
yep.
He seemed to have gotten a bit of a bee in his bonnet, but, you know, he points out very, very clearly, and I think very articulately and accurately, you know, you survey the Windows landscape. Before there was mobile and tablet, there was only Windows, so everybody bought it, and that's what you had, big, smaller in between, you know, mm-hmm. a console at home or a laptop at home or wherever you took it. That's what you used, and that's how you did everything. That's how you did your home finance. That's how you consumed
yep.
you know, media and entertainment, did social media and everything. Well, there are more convenient ways to do that now.
Mm-hmm.
And Microsoft did not prevail in those domains, so that is gone.
Yeah.
And so even in business, our thesis, and this has been demonstrated through the last several years of extreme growth, is mm-hmm. that, you know, business is pretty cemented around the Windows platform and probably will continue to be.
Yeah.
Around the edges, though, a lot of productivity is happening on these smaller form factor, you know, good sure. on the go kind of devices.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you see that play into this landscape as well of how Windows is used, adopted, how it's managed and maintained, and how the business looks at it going forward. And I think that's an important thing for us to kind of weave into this narrative throughout the year, is, you know, the place that occupies has evolved, mm-hmm. meaning Windows' role in business has become a very specific thing. It's for a very high productivity, thought work, high output, you know, business communications, long form communications.
Yep.
And then there are other places to go to fill in the gaps. And we're not as compelled or conflicted when we, you know, feel like we got to catch up on a quick personal email using our work devices. You just jump on your phone and bang it out through your app of choice, right? So in that way, I think that we'll see, you know, patterns of adoption and replacement and all those things continue to evolve. And we're also seeing that in some of the offerings coming from Microsoft, right? Look at Autopilot and some of their deployment yeah. models and usage models and things like that. And we've been doing some work against that too, to kind of really figure out what these scenario key supported scenarios are and where the holes are, and kind of doing some head scratching. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners are doing the same. I'd actually be really curious to know, how people are doing that and how it's working. We know some of our customers have adopted that as well and are enjoying some success on those platforms. So yeah, it's just sort of a thought piece as we head into the year of sort of the whole landscape and this end of life of seven being maybe a tipping point for really 10 becoming its whole own thing, with the caveat that again, as Paul pointed out, there's a lot to consider in this robust landscape.
Yeah. Speaking of a lot to consider, we are also occurring on Patch Tuesday. We don't always talk about all the patches, but I think this one is definitely worth pointing out. CVE 2020-0601. To the layman, that means absolutely nothing, but it actually made a lot of noise across the internet because it was actually a flaw within Windows, pointed out by the NSA, which I believe is a first, at least publicly, they're taking credit for it, in the elliptical curve of cryptography certificates. And basically, this is the government saying, hey, we found a hole. Typically, they've been known to weaponize those things. And now they're actually coming to Microsoft and saying, hey, you got to fix this.
The good thing is that there's a patch,
Yep.
right? I mean, I think that if there wasn't, if like this would be this would be a very long podcast. It would be a single topic
Yep.
podcast if there didn't exist this patch, but there is. So fortunately, thankfully, we have a solution. The problem is our listeners and the business audience in general in a position to deploy that in a timely way? Are they tooled up and
Yep.
organized? And the vast majority of businesses, certainly any business with over 200 to 500 devices, would be tooled up for it. And it's just a matter of getting on it and installing the patches in a timely way, and everything should be fine. But the irony to me on this one, well, number one, it's a really nasty one, because the exploitation of it plays right into the way that hacks are working today.
Yeah.
So they're basically able to steal your signature, and start messing with things, and really do a lot more gnarly impersonation, is what it looked like to me based on what I read. That's not good. And we've seen some of our employees get taken advantage of in some of these kind of modern, spear phishing attack style exploits. And this is a great enabler for that. So it's extra important that people move quickly on it. But the most ironic thing is it does not affect Windows 7.
Yeah.
So here's this case where the prevailing platform has this hole, legacy platform does not. That struck me as sort of bitterly ironic. That said, it's just a matter of time before one is found on Windows 7. Who's going to keep paying the whatever it is, $10 a device a month for the
Right.
out of band patches, and on what time frame will those fixes be made available, and so on and so forth. So despite the irony, it's still the right thing to get to the new platform, have your house in order, and be ready to address it, and just keep moving on. Right. I mean, for me, the scariest part of this is this pertains to the world of cryptography, which we rely on as one of our key security mechanisms, the royal we, all of us, and increasingly so. And to know that the platform that we rely on has some of these holes is a little disconcerting. But it is really great to see, to our knowledge, and I checked with our team as well on this, Brad, we don't know of a time in the past that the NSA has acknowledged telling Microsoft about this. Does Microsoft find out through some back channel way from someone in the security community, perhaps? But sort of this front and center kind of co not seeming cooperation is a first, and I think really a favorable sign overall.
Yeah, I think you said it quite well. I agree. We'll be curious to see if this becomes the norm. My gut, and I don't have any you know, inside information to back this up, is that they saw this exploit being used in the wild by a nation state, and they said, hey, Microsoft, you need to go patch that because XYZ are currently using it to attack whoever.
Sure, absolutely. And especially after, like, some of the proof of concept code got released, way too easy for a less technically sophisticated evil doer to just be like, oh, I can just sort of hack this, you know, at a almost a pseudocode level. I bet I can figure out, oh, yep, here we go.
Yeah.
And off they go and bad stuff starts happening. And, you know, so yeah, certainly the United States is not in a position to be leaving that stuff wide open. And I think that, you know, most organizations, most states, in the broadest sense, most countries in the world have a lot of reasons to keep their guard up too. So I think it's in everyone's interest.
Yep.
And you know, grateful this one got squashed so quickly.
Yeah. Pivoting on here, we got an interesting question came in this week, and it was targeted specifically for you. And I think this is perfect because we don't always get a chance to talk about soft skills around here, but they're incredibly important. This comes from an individual named Chris. He says, I am graduating college in the spring and I'm starting to hunt for my first job in the IT field. I had an internship with a small company doing network management and want to know what Aaron looks for in a resume for new hires at Smart Deploy.
That is a great question. You know, hiring is difficult and it's expensive and it's time consuming. So, you know, we look for a variety of things, and what we look for varies broadly. It varies massively depending on the job. If you have a technical role, the things we look for are very, very different than if you have a non-technical role. So non-technical, I mean, the interesting thing is that even in marketing now, there are lots of technical jobs, right? In fact, I would argue there really isn't a marketing role anymore that isn't technical on some level. That said, specifically pertaining to engineering jobs, whether it's an IT thing or a software engineering thing, the actual technical skill set and your acumen, what you know and what you've done, and the way that pertains to the organization that you're applying to and the specific job that you're applying for is really, really important. So I would look at other resumes of people like me or people who do the job that I'm applying for, successful people, people who've done it for a long time, and see to what extent you can pattern your resume after that in terms of the information it includes. You don't want to be dishonest. You don't want to take, you know, Joe Schmuckatelli's 25 years as a, you know, awesome network engineer profile and just slap that on and act like that's what you know.
Yep.
That is a death wish. That would be a big black eye. But what I'm speaking to is, in what order do they present information? And developers are particularly good at this. They start out by saying, here are the technologies I know. And you know, usually it's a pretty good list. Here are the projects I've done with those technologies and the way in which I've used them. Maybe the development environment. And then it'll go to the actual sort of work history. The work history is the last thing usually that I've seen anyway on the developer resumes that I still look at. You know, sometimes it's the other way around, but invariably, there's a lot of detail on what you do, the way you've done it, how much of it you've done, and some evidence of the kinds of projects. So that's what I would, when we think about technical roles of any kind, that's a key consideration. Another really important thing, though, is attitude.
That's where you're stealing mine.
Right?
No, I fully agree. My first job I got out of college, you know, once I was in the role for a little bit, I asked my boss at the time, I said, why did I get hired out of whatever, probably the 100, 200 applicants? And she sat me down and said, look, your skill set was fine. It was, you know, average. The job was honestly probably a little above what your skill was. But she goes, I got the sense from you that I could throw anything at you and that you would try to figure it out. and that you wouldn't get down in the dumps and that you'd take a positive look at it and just charge full steam ahead and you'd ask for help when you didn't know what to do. And she said, that's why you got hired as opposed to somebody who had 5 years experience senior to you.
You got it. That's a huge, huge part of it. And part of it also is just, how are you presenting yourself?
Yep.
You know, are you having a smile on your face and are you easy to work with? Are you easy to be around? Are you going to be a good team player? Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't mean you have to be all chipper and
right.
all lit up and contrary to your actual personality. You really want to be yourself, but you want to be a professional.
Correct. Yep.
Right. And that's another thing to look at is you might be perfectly well qualified, but just not a fit to the team culture. Mm-hmm. And it's not good. It's not good for either of us. Yep. Right. I mean, this is a person I've never met. They might look great on paper. We get on the phone. It's like, oh man, they really seem like the right kind of person. But, you know, I know that we put them in the pool and it's going to be oil and water. This is never going to work. And it doesn't yep. mean that you're not good at what you do. It just means you wouldn't be very good here.
Yep.
And, you know, the good news is for anyone coming out of school right now, assuming this person's in North America, there is a wild abundance of jobs. There is no shortage of demand. So a no doesn't mean that you're no good. And I used to feel that way, like, oh, so much rejection.
Yeah.
You know, oh man, what am I gonna do? It's really about going beyond that and keeping yourself confident and maybe even asking if they have, you're working with a recruiter at the organization mm-hmm. or, you know, whatever the source might be, that you ask them for feedback. Hey, you know, I'd love to know, you know, the criteria for which I was not selected, right? I yep. mean, was it attitude, was it personality, was it skill set, was it, you know, my tone of voice? You know, mm-hmm. it might be something really benign and minor, and knowing that means that the next interview could really go differently. Not that you want to, if they're like, oh, well, your voice is too loud, that you want to speak in these hushed tones or something. You want to yep. be yourself, because eventually that's going to come out. But you know that then it's not the fact that, oh, you're only a Cisco person and not a Palo Alto person or whatever, right? I mean, it's a, right? I mean, it's sometimes a really benign seeming thing that becomes a non-starter for certain organizations, and it just is cultural. Mm-hmm. So I think the best thing is present yourself on paper as well as you can, present yourself in person as best you can. Also, show up with research, right? I mean, I can't tell you the number of people I talk to and I say, okay, well, what have you done to prepare for this discussion? What do you know about what we do?
Yep.
And they don't really have anything to say.
Yeah.
So that's just even the most basic awareness, you know, what does Smart Deploy do? Okay, you have roots in OS deployment, you're moving to end-to-end Windows Systems Manager, you're the first ones in the cloud. Yeah, that's exactly right, right? And you mm-hmm. come in saying that, I'm going to get more excited than, I don't know, I was hoping to learn from you today.
Yep.
That's not a great answer.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, no, I think it's important to want to show interest in the company. And it's so cliche because everyone's like, well, I'm here for the paycheck. But realistically, you need to find a company that aligns with something you're at least hopefully vaguely interested in, because if you're interested in your work, it will make working not feel like work. And that is the end goal. You want to enjoy what you do and you will be much more successful at it in your career if you can get into those opportunities.
No question, right? Passion counts for a ton mm-hmm. because if you have less experience, but, you know, basic fundamentals, you seem to have the aptitude and you are fired up about it and you're saying, you know what, I don't know everything, but I think I know enough to do this job really well and I'm going to yep. work my butt off for you. I get excited about those people.
Yeah.
Right. So you want to make me feel the zeal. And if you do that, then it really can be, you know, kind of a game changer in terms of the arc of the interview discussion, you know, knowing that someone really wants the job. Mm-hmm. The other thing is specifically for network engineers, you're entering a world with a lot of really senior talent. And specifically what I mean is people who are nearing their end of their career, right? I mean, this is a job that's been around long enough that there are people looking at retirement. So you're in a good place at a good time, because a lot of those people also got into a situation where network engineers do pretty well. They're well paid generally. Mm-hmm. That's good news for us, by the way. And but because of that, sometimes network engineers lose that energy, and they can kind of be, you know, like, oh well, I do this because it's the best paying thing I can do, but I'm kind of sick of it. I, you know, I'm sick of Cisco, this and that. You know, all right, you know, you've done a million deployments, a million migrations. Yeah, you know, I understand that you understand. You know, is it iOS? Isn't that what they call the Cisco OS? Anyway,
so. Yeah.
That you know, this is their world inside and out, and they're burnt out and they're over it. New energy can really be really positive in that. So again, equal parts, I would say, for a technical role, attitude, energy, passion, as well as technical qualification and how you present yourself. And that doesn't mean you have to go out and get all the certifications and come show up at the table knowing everything, but just make sure that your employer knows that you're competent.
Yeah, I think that's well said from somebody who is in the position that hires people, sees careers come and go and flourish and all that stuff. It's good advice.
Lots. Good luck.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll be curious to see, Chris, do follow up. If you run into anything, I'm curious to see how this shakes out. Right. Although if you're in school, I would imagine I guess you might be applying about now if you're looking for a job or in the May to July timeframe. So.
Yeah, this is the time. And you know, on that night, that little internship is certainly helpful too, right? Yep. Knowing you've tasted the real world. But, you know, it's been a mixed bag under our roof. You know, new grads, we've had some amazing successes. We've also had some real head scratching, didn't work out so great. So, you know, I think also Chris is the listener's name, right?
Correct, yep.
Chris, be prepared for any outcome. And the best thing to say if you're shown the door in an untimely way is thanks for the opportunity. You may not understand at the time. You might be totally resentful, full of hate. But just thank the employer for the opportunity, because generally it's not personal.
Yeah.
It almost never is personal when there's a termination that happens. It's a hard thing for everybody, I assure you. So good luck.
Very good stuff. You got anything else for us, Aaron, as we shut down this first episode here off in
you know, 2020? I'm hesitant to bring it up because, you know, I feel like when we started this last year, it's all I talked about, but the snow has been phenomenal.
I've been
in Canada and it has been all world. It has just been amazing. So I think that in especially Eastern Canada, if we have listeners in Newfoundland and Labrador, I think that they are probably shaking their fist at me because they're digging out from so much snow and they don't have the same mountains that British Columbia has to enjoy. Same in the Midwest and Eastern United States. But it has been just phenomenal. I think Europe's doing well. So it has been a very fun and favorable start to the year, but definitely time to hunker down, get back to work and start focusing on 2020. We got a big year ahead of us and a lot of fun, cool stuff coming, for our current and prospective customers. So
very cool. And if you guys want to follow Aaron or just find out what's going on at Smart Deploy, there's always links down below in the posts and all that good stuff. But Aaron, we appreciate you stopping by and we'll catch up here in a couple weeks. And as we plow on into 2020, folks, if you have any questions or anything along the way, make sure to reach out. We're happy to answer them and we'll catch all of you right back here next time.